Thea's a delight, isn't she? She's an incredible cook, right? Did she make a pavlova for you? She always made those for guests. It's quite a long haul from Amarillo, but a pavlova is worth it. I don't know. Maybe I should have saved Tekapo until the end. It's a long way to ask you to come this early on. The middle of nowhere. A tiny town on an island at the bottom of the world. And it really would have been a beautiful place to cap off my story. Rose's story. I could have sent you gallivanting off on an adventure and then brought you here at the end to rest. Because it is a restful place, isn't it? Can't you feel it? Even the drive there from Ototahi is restful. The roads are so quiet, and the scenery is so beautiful. Tekapo would have been the perfect place to spend a few days recuperating after the excitement of some of the other places I'm going to send you. But I don't know. I didn't want to wait to show you this place. And I was never one to plan a perfectly organized itinerary. What are you going to do about it? Enjoy yourself. That's what you're going to do. Tekapo was one of the first places your mother brought me. She'd been asking to write about Aotearoa from the moment she started travel writing. But it's not a place you go for a quick jaunt, and we didn't. We spent 3 months there in 1974, traveling around, mostly Te Waipanamu, though all of it is gorgeous. I've sent you to a specific place rather than the whole country, but I hope you explore more. I mean, you will have had to explore more just to get there, of course, but if you can, spend some time. For such a small place, it's remarkable how much variety there is. Te Waipounamu is more rugged and changeable. Te Ika Amaui is lush and green. Did you know that before the reckoning, they were just called the North and South Islands? Honestly, there are a lot of reasons to be glad about the end of colonization, but the lack of imagination in naming the land is definitely one of them. Anyway, it's a nice place to wander around for a bit. Peaceful. When we were there, we flew into Tamakimakaru, though we only stayed for a few days. We hired a camper van and drove up to the top of the island. We stood on the beach by the Tererenga Wairua Lighthouse and looked across the Pacific, knowing there were hundreds of miles of ocean between us and the next patch of land. And then we drove back down, meandering across the island until we reached the bottom, and took the ferry across to Te Waipounamu. We explored it all until we were right at the bottom. We took a boat to Rakiura, where you can look across the ocean and know that if you kept going, the next spot of land you'd find would be Antarctica. I think Rose would have gone to Antarctica if she'd had the chance. But Rakiura is as close as I wanted to get. I don't do well in the cold. We did a lot of exciting things in Aotearoa. We went sailing and surfing. We hiked up mountains to see glaciers. We went whitewater rafting and horseback riding. Oh, I don't want to sound like a travel brochure. Wait, yes, I do. I love this place. I was married to a travel writer. Of course. I want you to see every part of Aotearoa. I hope you do, too. But for some reason, I wanted you to come here, to Tekapo, more than anywhere else. I wanted you to come to this tiny lakeside town and just exist there for a while. It's a far cry from the lights and humidity of Miami. Rose had taken me on a handful of trips in the months since we met in Miami. It seemed natural. We just... We just always wanted to talk to each other. When she went away without me, it wasn't like I pined for her. I didn't stride about in despair over missing her. It was more prosaic, more annoying. I would make a joke or tell a story to a friend and be frustrated that they didn't get it as well as Rose would have got it. It was like going to take a sip of your coffee and realizing the cup is empty and you have to make another one. That is a terrible analogy for love, but it's the closest I can get. We'd only been going out for a few months when she got the commission to write about Aotearoa. Too early in a relationship for such a long trip. Too much to ask to leave my shop to Anna and Zahara to take care of alone. A trip this far is a commitment. Too much of a commitment. But I came with her anyway. Not going would have been a commitment, too. That was the only one I really didn't want to make. So Rose and I came for the entire summer, from right before Christmas into early April. It was the longest stretch of time we had spent around each other, and it was a strange way to spend that much time that early. Driving through mountains and long beaches, camping in a tiny tin van if we couldn't find anywhere better to stay, exploring and adventuring, and for the last week or so, we came to Tekapo and just existed, quietly. There are only a few things I think you absolutely have to do while you're here. On a clear night, walk up the hill to the observatory. This is true anywhere you go, really. If there's an observatory, you should go there and look at the stars. Hey, they're different down here, you know? It's one of those things that makes sense when you think about it. Each little bit of the world gets a slightly different view of the sky. But I don't know. I like to be reminded. The sky is so certain, so familiar. You take your stars for granted. I like looking at someone else's for a while, thinking about how the world we live in is infinitely different for everyone who lives in it. The world is round, and everyone is right side up. Another thing to do. On a quiet day, go to the Church of the Good Shepherd and just sit for a while. The church was built toward the end of the Great Reckoning to commemorate those who had died in the wars and celebrate those who had come home. Fighting in Aotearoa didn't last very long, of course. Initially, they sent soldiers overseas. When the first wars broke out, they were part of the British Empire. But as often happened in colonized countries, this led to protests at home, which spiraled for a time into small pitched battles. But most of these happened on the northern island, Te Ika Amaui, and they only lasted for a few years in the 20s. It was too small a country, I think, to easily bear the loss of life, so the people stopped participating. Soldiers stationed overseas began deserting, and at some point, I'm not sure when, I never was one for dates and details, the country of Aotearoa, formerly New Zealand, declared itself a republic, owing no allegiance to Britain. They were one of the last countries to join the Global Societal Council, I believe, not wanting to simply rejoin another empire. Which is all to say, this little stone church was built while war still raged around the globe, but after the people of this land had walked away from it. Easier to do when you're a tiny nation in the middle of the ocean. I'm not saying you need to think about history when you visit this church. I think you shouldn't, in fact. Just walk in and sit. Most little stone churches, most big stone churches as well, have stained glass windows, thin ones stretching up the walls and curving into a point. They're beautiful, of course, but you can see why they chose to do something different here, can't you? Most stone churches have art in the form of colored glass behind their pulpits. And however beautiful they are, you get used to them. But the people who built this church chose to let you look out on the real wonder of creation, a vast panel of clear glass that surely gives more of a spiritual connection than any work of art. I don't think you'd ever get used to that. I don't know what you believe, if you follow a god or not. I'm not even sure what I believe half the time. But it's easy to feel the presence of something greater when you sit in this little stone church with its wide, wide window looking out on that incredible lake. With an altar set before that view, it's hard not to worship, even if you're not sure what it is you're worshiping. So sit there for a time. Let your soul rejoice for a time.
Tired of walking around shirtless because you don't have a single upper body article of clothing that expresses your intense love of the immersive fiction podcast Within the Wires? Are you having to scrawl the words Within the Wires on your chest with a faded Sharpie you found at the bottom of your backpack one day, but it's hard to write upside down so the letters are mostly illegible and you misspelled wires as Ryas? Do you find that damselfly logo hard to draw, especially on skin? Well, stop that. Actually, don't stop that. I think it's pretty cool you went through so much trouble to show your love of our show. Thank you. But I personally, just me, find t-shirts much more convenient for that sort of thing. And we have brand new Within the Wires shirts in our store. The incomparable Emily Tatt designed a damselfly shirt that glows in the damn dark. And the impeccable Dave Watt created a Season 3 dictaphone recording device shirt that looks like a cool retro film poster. Plus, we have Rob Wilson's classic Within the Wires logo shirt and his Season 2 museum shirts, which are
arty as hell.
Maybe you're also tired of the walls in your home or dorm or office being shirtless as well, and you want to cover them up. Come on, walls. I have friends coming over. Try to look decent. Well, you can buy your walls some posters, like the Within the Wires logo or Jessica Hayworth's stunning rendition of Claudia Atieno's Child with Damselfly, as featured in Season 2. It's a real art print. It's classier than all get out. You can get shirts and posters at withinthewires.com and then click on shirts and posters. That's a lot of complicated steps, so I recommend writing them down on your arm using that old Sharpie. Again, withinthewires.com, click on shirts and posters.
I forgot to tell you the other thing you should do here. It's a simple one, really. Get some fish and chips and sit outside and eat them. Go to the place with the yellow sign, not the red one. I've already forgotten the names, but take the parcel of newsprint and hold it against your body, letting it warm you as you walk away. Then sit on the ground as dusk falls and open it in front of you. It's such a simple thing. Salty, deep-fried snapper and potato, but something about the grease, about the flaky fish, about the soft chips eaten outside on a warm summer night. Something about it just seeps into your bones. It was here that I learned that Rose didn't use napkins. We sat on the grass and she laughed at me as I wiped my hands constantly on a big wad of napkins. "What a waste," she said. "What did that bit of paper do to deserve all that flavor?" She licked her fingers, sucking every bit of salt and grease she could get, like she was relishing eating with her hands instead of with cutlery. It would be easy to say that that was the moment I fell in love with her, and it wouldn't be a lie, but it wouldn't be true either. I had fallen in love on the dance floor in Miami. I fell in love the first time she told me about a book she adored. She got so carried away, she dragged me back to her place, dug it off the shelf, and started reading it to me. She pushed it on me to read. The margins were full of notes she'd made. I fell in love with her again and again and again, atop mountains, in museums, in tiny boats on rushing waters. And I fell in love with her over and over in common silences, during breakfasts and rainy afternoons, doing chores while listening to the radio. This is what no one tells you when you're young. Love isn't just about excitement. It's about quotidian dullness, too. And here were 2 weeks in Tekapo, napkins and fish and chips and ease, steady embers, not white-hot flame. The prosaic turned new and thrilling in infinite, tiny ways. I had been in love before a couple of times, but it was always passion and possessiveness. Every relationship I'd had ended either because of jealousy or exhaustion, a giant fireball that used up all of its fuel in a short burst, or because after a few months when the early passions had faded, there was nothing there in the boredom. It was quite something to find that with Rose, there was still passion, even in the stillness. Not every night needs a dance party. Not every dinner needs a drink. It's like seeing an incredible sunrise and not being afraid to look away from it. However beautiful it is, you don't have to watch it every second. You don't have to absorb all of its majesty. You don't have to judge it for being too cloudy or too bright. You simply sit in its light and let it be. Here we were, our first time spending every day together without having anything really planned. At home, we weren't living together yet, so any time we saw each other, our time was built around activity. Even if it was just watching a movie or something, and when we traveled, we did a lot, from museums, to hikes, to carnivals, to whatever. She had to, of course, she had to write about it all, and we both wanted to get the most we could out of each trip. But this, in Tekapo, we woke up with nothing planned, nothing laid out before us. We woke up each day and just existed, side by side, seeing where the day would take us. Oh, and sometimes it took us nowhere. Sometimes we just stayed in, floating gently around the batch. I wish I knew why they call them batches instead of cabins or lodges. Reading in the shade, lying idle in the hammock. As soon as we got back home, we moved in together. We always talked about going back to Tekapo, but we never did. It's a long way to go there, and there were so many other places to see. It's easy to have regular haunts that are only a few hours on a plane, places you can pop to for a long weekend. It's harder to go back when things are far away. That kind of trip is a commitment. And committing to one thing means giving up on others. We used to talk about how we'd move there when we were old, retire there. Such a small town, and such kind people. But I don't think we would have, really. We wouldn't have wanted to live so far away from our friends. We had met some great people when we were here, but Thea was the only one we kept in touch with over the years, and even that was just the occasional letter or birthday card. To be honest, Tekapo has been a little lonely for me this time. A quiet town gives less to distract me from the fact that I was once here with her. It feels haunted. Probably everywhere is haunted, but ghosts get drowned out more easily in the big cities. Oh, I wonder now if I've set you up against this place. Coming somewhere this quiet is not the same when you're on your own. Maybe it will be different for you. Maybe you'll be able to appreciate it all the more for not having a divided focus. And you're a quieter person than me. You're comfortable in your own company, I think. I hope. I would hate to think of you spending so much time alone when you'd rather be with people. I always like to have a crowd around. So did Rose. I can see her, you know. I can see Rose walking along the shore, heading up the hills, always faster than me, always stronger, looking back and laughing at me whenever I found myself out of breath trying to keep up with her. I was often out of breath trying to keep up with her. I want you to be able to see her here too. The bright sun glinting off her tumbling hair, I wish you could hear her. Her laugh so bright, so high. The photos I included in the package with this tape were all taken here. There are directions on the back of each of them so you can visit the places we took them. Most of these spots you can get to on foot, but it's worth getting on a horse for some of them. Can you ride? Oh, I don't know if you can ride. I think you'd be good at it. Your mother was. She did show jumping for a while when she was a teenager. Well, I guess I shouldn't assume you'll like everything she liked. I'm sure it doesn't work like that. But it's worth trying. I hope you got some rest here, in any case. The next tape will be waiting for you in Jakarta. I'll bury it in the park along the Kali Sunter River on the far east part of town. The address is on the back of the photo of me and Rose at the ruins at Onrust Island. I'll mark the spot with a bunch of Malati flowers. I've been recording this outside the batch I'm staying in. It's not the same one I stayed in with Rose, but it's near and it's pretty similar. I've been looking out at the street that leads down to the lake, and all week, I can almost see her walking along it. You know when you see something out of the corner of your eye, but when you turn to look properly, it vanishes? Just now, I would have sworn there was someone there, but this time, it wasn't Rose. I thought it was you, Anita. But when I turned to look properly, no one was there.
Within the Wires is written by Janina Mathewson and me, Jeffrey Craner, with original music by Mary Epworth. Find more of Mary's music at maryepworth.com. This show was produced by me and directed this season by Janina. The voice of Elena Jimenez is April Ortiz. Support our Patreon and get exclusive episodes and video chats with me and Janina at patreon.com/withinthewires. Also, read our novel set in the Within the Wires universe. It's called You Feel It Just Below the Ribs. It is available wherever you get your books. Within the Wires is part of Night Vale Presents. Listen to other amazing shows at nightvalepresents.com. Okay, our time is done. It's you time now. Time to take a trip. Hitch a ride on a
recumbent bike
to the city of
Tokyo,
commonly referred to by locals as
the Big Easy,
and go see their famous landmark, the
Neosporin Museum.
Alice Isn't Dead is a horror thriller road trip from the team behind Welcome to Night Vale, and starring Jessica Nicole of Fringe and Night Vale. A truck driver searches the country for the long-lost wife she thought was dead, but Alice isn't dead. If you love American Gods or Stephen King or Night Vale, you'll love this show. The entire series available to binge now wherever you listen to podcasts.